Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of The Scribe Vibe with Janae. Hi, I'm Janae. Today, whether you're a seasoned author or just starting out, procrastination can be a significant hurdle in achieving your goals. In this episode, we'll explore practical strategies to overcome procrastination and boost your productivity. So if you've ever found yourself putting off the next chapter, delaying edits, or avoiding that blank page, this episode is for you. Procrastination isn't just about delaying tasks. It can have a profound impact on your mental health, creativity, and overall productivity. It often leads to feelings of guilt, stress, and anxiety, which can create a vicious cycle that's hard to break. For writers, procrastination can stall progress on projects, disrupt creative flow, and ultimately hinder career growth. Understanding and addressing root causes of procrastination is essential to unlocking your full potential and achieving your writing goals. Let's start by defining procrastination. Procrastination is the act of delaying or postponing tasks, often to the point where it negatively impacts your productivity and well-being. A misconception is that procrastination is simply about laziness or lack of willpower. In reality, it's often more complex, involving a mix of psychological factors and personal habits. Another misconception is that procrastination only affects those that are disorganized or lack motivation. The truth is, even highly motivated or organized individuals can struggle with procrastination. It's not about the lack of desire to accomplish tasks, but rather about the mental or emotional barriers that get in the way. To effectively combat procrastination, it's important to understand the psychological factors at play. Here are a few key ones. Fear of failure. Many people procrastinate because they fear not meeting their own or others' expectations. This fear can be paralyzing and prevent you from even starting a task. Perfectionism. The desire to achieve perfection can lead to procrastination. When you set impossibly high standards for yourself, it can be daunting to begin a task, knowing it might not meet those standards. Overwhelm. Feeling overwhelmed by the size or complexity of the task can make it difficult to start. Steps can help reduce these feelings. Lack of motivation. Sometimes procrastination is simply due to lack of interest or motivation. Finding ways to make tasks more engaging or connecting them to your larger goals can help. Instant gratification. We live in a world of immediate rewards, and it can be challenging to prioritize long-term goals over short-term pleasures. This tendency to seek instant gratification can lead to procrastination. By understanding these underlying factors, you can develop strategies to address them and reduce procrastination in your writing routine. Types of procrastination. Avoiders. Avoiders procrastinate because they want to avoid something they find unpleasant or anxiety-inducing. This might include tasks that are challenging, boring, or evoke fear of failure. Avoiders often distract themselves with more enjoyable activities to dodge the discomfort of task at hand. For writers, this can mean putting off writing a difficult scene or tackling revisions. Optimists. Optimists tend to underestimate the time required to complete tasks. Delay starting because they think they have plenty of time. This overconfidence can lead to last-minute rushes and subpar work. In writing, an optimist might delay starting their manuscript, thinking they can write the bulk of it in a few intense sessions. Perfectionists. Which I am guilty of. Perfectionists procrastinate because they set incredibly high standards for themselves. The fear of not meeting these high standards can be paralyzing. they might delay starting a task because they feel they won't do it perfectly, or postpone finishing it because they keep tweaking and refining their work. For writers, this often manifests as endless revisions and the inability to declare a piece done. Busy procrastinators. Busy procrastinators fill their time with tasks that may seem productive, but actually avoiding the more important, challenging work. They might clean the house, organize their desk, or engage in other busy work instead of focusing on their writing. This gives them the sense of productivity while they avoid the real work that needs to be done. Procrastination can spill into personal life, affecting relationships and daily routines. It can cause unnecessary stress and tension, especially when deadlines loom and tasks pile up. For writers, procrastination might lead to missed family time, social engagements, or self-care activities as they scramble to meet deadlines. This imbalance can create friction in personal relationships and impact overall well-being. In professional realm, procrastination can damage your reputation and hinder your career growth. For writers, this might mean missing publication deadlines, producing low quality work, or failing to complete projects. It can also lead to lost opportunities, such as missed collaborations or speaking engagements. Consistent procrastination can erode trust with editors, publishers, and readers, ultimately affecting your professional standing and future prospects. The mental health impact of procrastination can be profound. Chronic procrastination often leads to feelings of guilt, shame, and stress. This constant cycle of putting off tasks and then rushing to complete them can create anxiety and a sense of being overwhelmed. For writers, this mental strain can stifle creativity and make the writing process feel burdensome. Over time, this can lead to burnout, depression, and a diminished passion for writing. By understanding the types of procrastination and their consequences, listeners can begin to recognize their own patterns and take steps to address this awareness. Is the first step to developing healthier habits and achieving their writing goals. One of the most effective ways to combat procrastination is to break large, daunting tasks into smaller, more manageable steps. This approach reduces the feeling of being overwhelmed, and it makes it easier to start working. For writers, this can mean setting daily word count goals, focusing on one chapter at a time, or even breaking a chapter into scenes. By tackling smaller chunks, the overall task becomes less intimidating and progress becomes more tangible. The Pomodoro technique is a time management method that can help you stay focused and productive. It involves working for 25-minute intervals, also known as Pomodoros, followed by a short 5-minute break. After completing 4 Pomodoros, you take a longer break of 15 to 30 minutes. This technique can help maintain concentration and reduce burnout by ensuring regular breaks. Writers can use this method to create dedicated writing sessions, making it easier to start and stay on task. Implementing a reward system can motivate you to complete tasks by providing a positive reinforcement. Set specific goals and reward yourself when you achieve them. For instance, after completing a writing session, you might treat yourself to a favorite snack, a short walk, or some leisure time. Rewards can help create a positive association with productivity, making it easier to overcome procrastination in the future. A structured environment can minimize distractions and foster productivity. Designate a specific area for writing, free from interruptions and clutter. Establish a consistent routine that includes setting writing times and breaks. By creating a dedicated workspace and schedule, you can train your mind to enter work mode more easily and reducing the temptation to procrastinate. Negative self-talk can be a significant barrier to overcoming procrastination. Thoughts like, I'll never get this done, or I'm not good enough, can sap your motivation and increase anxiety. Challenge these thoughts by replacing them with positive affirmations and focusing on your achievements. Remind yourself of past successes and the progress you've made, no matter how small. The shift in perspective can boost your confidence and reduce procrastination. A growth mindset is the belief that your abilities and intelligence can be developed through hard work and dedication. Embracing the mindset can help you view challenges as opportunities for growth rather than obstacles. Instead of fearing failure, you see it as a chance to learn and improve. For writers, this means understanding that each draft is a step towards a better final product, and every writing session is an opportunity to hone your craft. Self-compassion involves being kind to yourself, especially in the face of mistakes or setbacks. Recognize that procrastination is a common struggle and that it doesn't define your worth or abilities. Treat yourself with the same kindness and understanding you would offer a friend. By practicing self-compassion, you can reduce the guilt and shame associated with procrastination, making it easier to move forward and stay productive. These strategies and mindset shifts provide practical tools and insights to help you overcome procrastination and enhance your productivity. By implementing these approaches, you can make meaningful progress towards your writing goals and enjoy a more fulfilling creative journey. Time management apps can be invaluable in helping you stay organized and on track. Here are a few to consider. Todoist. This app allows you to create and manage tasks, set deadlines, and organize projects. It's a user-friendly interface, and integration with other tools can make it a great choice for writers. Trello. Trello uses boards, lists, and cards to help you visualize your tasks and progress. It's perfect for managing writing projects, tracking your progress, and collaborating with others. Microsoft To-Do. This app helps you create daily task lists, set reminders, and organize your tasks by project. It's a simple yet effective tool for managing your writing schedule. Using these apps can help you break down your writing projects into manageable tasks and ensure you to stay on top of your deadlines. Productivity trackers can provide insight into how you spend your time and help identify areas for improvement. Some popular options include Rescue Time. This app runs in the background and tracks your time spent on various applications and websites. It provides detailed reports and helps you identify distractions. Toggle. Toggle is a time tracking tool that lets you log how much time you spend on different tasks. It's great for understanding how long you spend writing and identifying areas where you could be more efficient. Clockify. Clockify is another great time tracking tool that offers detailed reports and helps you monitor your productivity. It is useful for setting goals and ensuring you spend enough time on your writing projects. These tools can help you stay accountable and make data-driven decisions to enhance your productivity. Focus-enhancing tools can minimize distractions and help you maintain concentration during writing sessions. Consider these options. Focus at Will. This app provides music specifically designed to help you focus and for productivity. The music is scientifically optimized to keep your mind engaged and reduce distractions. Forest is a unique app that helps you stay focused by growing virtual trees. When you concentrate, you plant a tree in the app, and it grows as you stay off your phone. If you leave the app, the tree dies. It's a fun and visually appealing way to stay focused. Freedom blocks distracting websites and apps for a set period, allowing you to focus on your writing without interruptions. You can customize your block list and schedule focus sessions in advance. These tools can create an environment that supports deep work and minimizes the temptation to procrastinate, Establishing a consistent writing routine can make writing a natural part of your daily life. Set aside dedicated time each day for writing. Stick to it as much as possible. Whether it's early in the morning or during lunch breaks or in the evening, having a regular schedule can help reinforce the habit of writing. Over time, your brain will associate this time for creativity and productivity, making it easier to get started. Setting realistic and achievable goals is crucial for building long-term habits. Break down your larger projects into smaller, manageable milestones. For example, instead of aiming to write a whole book in a month, set a goal to write a certain number of words or pages each day. Celebrate your progress along the way and adjust your goals as needed. Achieving these smaller goals will provide a sense of accomplishment and keep you motivated. Having an accountability partner can significantly enhance your commitment to writing. Find a fellow writer or a trusted friend who share similar goals and agree to check in with each other regularly. This can be through daily offering support and encouragement. Knowing that someone else is counting on you can provide an extra layer of motivation to stay on track and overcome procrastination. By utilizing these tools and apps and focusing on building long-term habits, you can create a creative environment for your writing endeavors. These strategies will help you maintain momentum, achieve your goals, and ultimately become more productive and a fulfilled writer. Today, we've delved into the persuasive issue of procrastination and explored practical strategies to overcome it. We discussed the different types of procrastinators, the personal and professional consequences of procrastination, and effective methods like breaking tasks into smaller steps, using the Pomodoro technique, and implementing a reward system. We also highlighted the importance of mindset shifts, including challenging negative self-talk, developing a growth mindset, and practicing self-compassion. Additionally, we covered tools and apps to enhance productivity and the value of building long-term habits. Remember, overcoming procrastination is a journey, not a destination. It's about making consistent small changes that lead to big results over time. Be patient with yourself and celebrate your progress, no matter how small. You've got this, and your writing goals are within reach. I'd love to hear about your experiences with beating procrastination. Share your stories and tips with me, and let's support each other in this journey. To get started, try a small, immediate task. Spend 5 minutes a day planning your next writing session. You'll be amazed at how taking the first step can set the stage for greater productivity. For more resources and updates, visit my website at www.JeneeWritesBooks.com. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, email me at JeneeC@JeneeWritesBooks.com. Don't forget to check out my Patreon page at Ream, R-E-A-M, Stories, STORIES.com/Janae Janae's Dark Romance, for exclusive content and support. A former guest, Deborah Blaine, or purchase her books at allthingswriting.com. Now, let's move on to our next segment, Writer's Talk.
And now let's move on to the segment I like to call Writer's Talk. Usually I have an author to interview in this section, but unfortunately the author I chose was unable to make it today. So I'm going to interview myself, and I am going to talk about my recent book, which is called Rue the Day. And so Rue the Day, what is it about? Rue the Day is about a hit woman who is unhappy with her life, and she learns that her favorite grandmother has passed on, and she goes back to her hometown to the funeral, which takes place during Mardi Gras, and she meets up with her high school crush named Lenny. Protagonist's name is Charlie, and Lenny invites her to a party which he had previously set up, and they get together, and the day after she goes to the gas station to get gas, she witnesses a murder, and she wakes up next to a body, and she investigates more about the girl who murdered, and she learns that her father, who was a journalist, like the girl, she learns that his death, which was ruled self-inflicted, may not have been self-inflicted. What inspired you to set Rue the Day in New Orleans during Mardi Gras? I had a dream about my grandmother who came to me. She's passed on. And the dream was more like a Netflix special. And she showed me the scene at the party, and the rest I came up with myself. I made the whole book around that scene of the girl going back to Louisiana to her grandmother's funeral. And I came up with the whole crime family that is intertwined with her family. And I came up with supernatural elements, all that came from my brain. I just had the dream about the scene at the party. How does the setting influence the story? Well, New Orleans is unlike any other town in anywhere. And I thought it would be, I've always wanted to write a story about New Orleans. I've always wanted to write a story about Louisiana because the people there are kind of like when I was living in Savannah, the people there were different. Like they were in their own time. And I think that New Orleans is a very beautiful and it's a very interesting place, just put it like that. Charlie Babineau is a complex character. How did you develop her personality and backstory? Charlie came from the dream. I knew in the dream she was a hit woman. And I knew that her grandmother died, and her grandmother comes to her occasionally as a ghost or a guide or whatever you want to call it. And all the rest, as I was writing the story, Charlie became more and more fantastical. And I initially tried to stay away from fantasy as far as what I usually write, which is about witches. And so there is and there isn't witches in the story. In the story, there are high priestesses and voodoo doctors, that kind of stuff. Not magical witches like in fantasy novels. So Charlie is a skeptic. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic because of how she evolves in the series. And I wanted to slowly show a skeptic becoming a believer. And during the course of the novel, she does just that. What makes her stand out as a hit woman protagonist? So Charlie is usually committing the hits as sort of a vengeance type deal. She's only takes cases where somebody's done something really bad And I know that's subjective, but what that means to her is people who have done something unthinkable and committed a heinous crime, and that is the only one she takes. She doesn't take the trivial ones usually. She's at a position in her field where, you know, her handler only comes to her with the most repugnant of people to bump off. And so that makes her a vigilante already. Family secrets play a central role in the plot. How did you weave secrets into the narrative, and why are they so pivotal to the story? So the Babineaus, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but I'm going to say it. The Babineaus have a curse on their family. Unbeknownst to Charlie, there's a curse on her family from a while ago, and it was put on them by one of a sister group. It was two sisters, and one of them put a curse on the Babineau family, and one of them put a curse on her love interest family, Lenny's family. And I thought that the secrets that they kept from each other and from Charlie served as sort of like, everybody has secrets. And even though people try their best to keep their secrets hidden, they always come to light. So what's done in the dark always comes to light, which is from the Bible. And it's kind of a running theme in the story, because I am a spiritual person, not religious. And so I have a lot of, but there is a lot of religious things going on in the book. And in the series, and in most of my books, there are religious type themes in most of my books. Because I'm so fascinated by religion, I'm so fascinated by the esoteric, which is one of the reasons I became a fantasy romance author. So the Babineaus are just like any other family. They have secrets, and it's the driving force that keeps them doing what they do, even though it could be seen as not so good as far as them being individuals. Some of the things they do, you know, it's a life or death situation, and they take it to the extreme. Some of them take it to the extreme. There's many Babineaus, and you know, Charlie has 10, is it 10? I think it's 9 or 10 aunts and uncles. So she's got a big family. And it's the driving force of the book. It's the driving force of the series, their secrets and how they can kill them. The Gaspard family is integral to the story. What research did you do to create an authentic depiction of a crime family in New Orleans? I just basically took the idea of a family controlling everything, wanting to rule over everyone, not only just Louisiana, but of the world. And they want to be all powerful. I just took one ideology and made it into, you know, that of the patriarch of the family. He has aspirations to be all powerful, like all evil geniuses or evil people or whatever. They want to be all powerful, even to their own destruction. So that was what I did. I didn't necessarily base the Gaspards on any real life family. I wanted to make sure that I did not get sued, for one. And I also wanted to make sure that I had something as original as I could do it with everything already being done. Mardi Gras is known for its vibrant chaos. How did you incorporate the atmosphere of the festival into the darker elements of the story? Well, Mardi Gras is where a lot of bad things happen too. I mean, people will see the floats, the parade, the beads, the revelry, and they think, oh, you know, I'm safe here. I could let down my guard, but no, you're still in a big city and there are unsavory characters lurking, waiting for people, unsuspecting people. And I didn't really put the festival itself into the story. It just takes place during Mardi Gras. I thought, you know, everybody's going to remember this because it takes place during Mardi Gras. And the original murder was not what came as a final product. The original murder was supposed to be something else. It was supposed to be some women getting murdered by the mother of someone that was brainwashed. But I scrapped that idea because I came up with the Gaspards and their, you know, whole thing. And that original idea was too complicated. So I made it into what it is now, which is a journalistic student is murdered in a ritualistic type of way. And yeah, it happens the day after the Mardi Gras, in the wee hours of the next day. So yeah. Charlie's relationship with Lenny adds a romantic layer to the narrative. How do you balance romance with the intense action and suspense? Well, the whole thing of it being a thriller romance is balancing. So I made sure to check in with myself from time to time as I was writing. And I also, when I was plotting, I made sure to make a mental note. Even though I didn't write it down, I put in the romance parts where they made sense. And this book, Rue the Day, has more love scenes than any book I've ever written. So I might have overdone the love scenes, but it was a romantic thriller and I want to make sure to emphasize the romance part. There's a lot of action that happens, but the romance is pivotal to the story. So it wasn't like a B-side, it was the story. All the other stuff happens around it. And so it's basically a love story with thriller themes, supernatural themes as well. And to balance that, it wasn't hard. I like writing thriller romance. My first book started out as a thriller romance, but it became fantasy as well. People say it's fast paced, and I'm hoping that Rue the Day is a little slower than that one, because I want people to become entangled in the mystery and the spookiness, the supernatural elements. Corruption and murder are reoccurring themes. What message or commentary do you hope the readers take away about these issues in the context of the story? I hope that people take away that crime doesn't pay. Good always wins. It's not about what you do, but who you are on the inside that matters. And love isn't so scary. That's what I hope people take away. The Louisiana bayous are depicted as beautiful and haunting. How do these contrasting elements reflect Charlie's journey? I think that life in general is beautiful and haunting at the same time. Everybody has a backstory. Everybody has things they're not so proud of, things that are traumatizing. And even if they are minor things, to that person, it might be the most traumatic thing they've ever been through. So you can't really think that somebody else's story isn't as bad as yours, or think that you've had it better than everybody else, because everybody's story is different and everybody's story is valid. And I think that Charlie's backstory is both filled with good times and bad times. And I think I've explained it very well in the story. You get a lot of her, you get a dose of her backstory as both bad and good. And even her current story as bad as and good. It's not all bad. It's not all good. So it's beautiful and haunting. Revenge is a powerful motivator for Charlie. How do you explore moral complexities of vengeance in the story? Well, Charlie's whole thing is that she only takes cases where she is getting retribution for people who have been wronged the most as a hit woman. And for her father, nobody did anything when he died, and they just accepted the story the police gave them as he unalived himself, and that was it. So when Charlie learns that there might have been somebody who did it for him and against his will, you know, she's already doing it for a living, so why not do it for her own father, whom she greatly admired and loved. And yeah, I wanted her to go on a journey for this book and for this series. And she goes from being just this average, well, not average, but she goes from being a hit woman of sorts to being this do-gooder for mankind. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic. So that's what I wrote. The novel is filled with twists and turns. How do you approach plotting to keep readers on the edge of their seats? I came up with the craziest things because I have to read this book more than anyone. And if I'm bored, I believe the reader is going to be bored. So I wanted to keep up my interests, and I'm easily bored. So I didn't write the craziest things. My alpha reader kind of kept me from writing too crazy. But like I said, I'm going to be the person that reads this the most. And if I don't want to read it, you know, why even put it out there? So, yeah, I did it for selfish reasons. Charlie's father's murder is the driving force of the plot. How do you develop the conspiracy around his death, and what impact does it have on Charlie's character development? So Charlie's official thing, his autopsy says self-inflicted, and everyone accepted it as such. But, you know, nobody questioned why he would do something. And I thought, you know, the fact that nobody questioned it and everybody just accepted it was kind of sus. And even Charlie thought that, but, you know, some people questioned it, but they didn't make a big enough fuss in Charlie's eyes. So, and the fact that he was already estranged from Charlie's mother, it didn't shed a good light on him. So, Charlie becomes sort of a PI and delves deep into his backstory and comes up with craziest connections to different things that one would not suspect. And one of those things is demonology, the supernatural, magic, voodoo, and during this investigation, Charlie's spirituality evolves, and I wanted it to, because of what she is and who she is. You know, she's not just your average human, hint, hint. She is different, and she has to go on a spiritual awakening. And so I made her hardcore. Even when it's happening, she's still a skeptic. And how do you turn a skeptic into a believer? Well, you show them. You can't tell them because words are cheap. Showing them themselves changed and something else, you know, is the best way. And all these people that are atheists, I think even if they saw it in person, they still would doubt themselves of what they just saw. Some people are just like that. Some people are so hardcore about their beliefs that even they won't even believe their own eyes. So I always say that even if Jesus comes back, people still won't believe it's him, even to their detriment. And, you know, that's just me. I just think people are so jaded nowadays. The world has really gone to, you know, crap about spirituality. So I hope that my books help people in some way have faith in something bigger than me, because it gives a lot of people hope. How do you think the themes of family loyalty and betrayal resonate with readers, especially within the context of the Southern Gothic genre? I think that, like I said, people are jaded nowadays, and the whole thing about families being loyal to each other is, I mean, there is no loyalty amongst people anymore. I think that people just expect their flesh and blood to betray them. And it's a sad reality that people aren't willing to put their trust in their own family. I think people can be naive and think that, you know, just because they know them or they're related by blood, that they won't do anything to hurt them. And I think that nowadays, that's not always the case. The way that society sees things nowadays is skewed, especially in the West. Fame, money is more important to some people than love and hope and dreams and it's a sad reality. I don't know what it's like in the East, but in the West, it's all over the news, all over TV, all over the internet, where, you know, children shoot their parents, parents off their children, brothers against brothers, you know, and it's terrible. And it's over dumb things. And I think that the people that honor those things, I think people who honor blood and who honor love and beauty and things that are priceless are better for it. I think that things have gotten out of control to the point that people have lost their humanity. And what I think that there are in the minority people who still believe in doing the right thing and being a good person, myself included, I think that we are in the minority. And I think people should stop trying to emulate people who don't have morals. I mean, New Orleans is a city with a rich cultural history. How do you ensure that the city itself felt like a character in the story? I had a lot of swamps, cemeteries, I had a lot of, there is, the curse is from the 1700s or around when New Orleans and Louisiana became a state, and the whole slavery thing. There's a lot of voodoo. And I made sure to touch on every element of Louisiana there was, from the food to the people to the voodoo to the high priestesses, and I didn't delve too deep into the history of Louisiana because the majority of this takes place in the current Louisiana, but I wanted to make sure that the places were authentic, and I wanted to make sure that it felt like Louisiana, it felt like New Orleans, it felt like the South in the story, but I wasn't making it about the culture of Louisiana. Charlie is drawn into a deadly game of cat and mouse. What challenges did you face in maintaining the suspense and tension throughout the novel? When I was first starting out as an author and I knew I wanted to write thrillers, there was a such thing as a ticking clock, and it gave me anxiety to write the novel. So that helped. I wanted to make sure that there was enough pause so that you could get comfortable in the story, but I also wanted to maintain that this is life or death.
there are people after her. There are beings after
the French
her.
Quarter and you know, the haunted swamps are iconic settings. How did you use these locations to enhance the mood and tone of the story? I had a lot of swamp and things attributing to the swamps in the story. There was a lot of cemeteries, a lot of old abandoned churches and crypts. Everything had a spooky overtone, which is kind of, in a way, reminiscent of towns like New Orleans. There's a lot of spookiness in Savannah as well, which is a place I lived for about 4 years. And I went to a cemetery in Savannah. It was very interesting. It was a very moody atmosphere. And I wanted to have that in this book as well. The whole thing of being in Louisiana, being in New Orleans, being around that type of history. I wanted to make sure that people knew they were reading something, if not authentic, but I wouldn't say authentic. I would say something that was Southern, something that was historical, something that was bigger than life. How did Charlie's journey in the Brew of the Day reflect broader things of redemption and self-discovery? In Rue of the Day, Charlie is trying to redeem her father's good name. I think it was desecrated by the fact that the police told the family that he unalived himself, which wasn't the case. But nobody knew that. Nobody suspected that. Nobody questioned that. And I think it was important to Charlie because of what she did for a living and because of how close she was to her father. I think it was important that she make sure that she put that to bed. It was kind of like cathartic, and it was closure for her. She doesn't complete her mission just yet in Rue of the Day, but she begins and she takes steps to in that direction. And I think it was important for her, not just for her father, but for everybody that's been oppressed by the Gaspards. What was your favorite scene to write in Rue of the Day and why? How did this encapsulate the essence of the story? I think my favorite part in the book was party. The party happened early on in the book, and I think if you've ever had a crush in your life and to find that the crush has the same feelings for you, I think that is like one of the greatest feelings in the world. And it was fun to write, being that they were so sweet to each other, and the fact that they got together after all these years. It's been 10 years since they saw each other, and the fact that they were sweet on each other and they didn't even know it was fun. And it's the crux of the book, because the book is about Charlie and her relationships, and Lenny is an important relationship to her because all these years she's felt alien, and you know, her relationship with Lenny is, it's like
finding your missing piece. And I think that during the course of the series, she's going to find that indeed she was meant to be with Lenny all along. It just wasn't the right time in high school, but now it is the right time. And even through their ups and downs, they find a way to complement each other. The book marks the beginning of the series. How do you plan to develop Charlie's character in and story in the future installments? Well, like I said before, Charlie isn't completely and totally just your average human. She's far from it. And she's also a skeptic. But as things start to happen to her and she sees it for her own eyes, I think she will become a believer. And the jump from being a skeptic to a believer is a journey in itself. So having her go through this and become more than a human, more than just average, it's remarkable. And I hope that when the reader comes into contact with this, they will find it as surprising, amusing, shocking as she does. What challenges did you face while writing Rue the Day, and how did you overcome it? I was writing two books at the same time, like I'm doing now. And it was hard to balance that life and everything else. but my brain works differently than everybody else's. And as I've aged, I've come to get used to balancing, juggling, if you will, things in my head. I think that's why I crank out so many novels, because I can't keep all this in my head. You know, my brain goes from plotting out something and plotting out all the chapters that I'm going to have in the book and what's going to be in the chapters. And then it thinks, oh, we're done. Let's move on to the next thing. But it's like, no, that's not how a book is written. And, you know, I found it hard to stay on one topic for so long. And now that I am writing the sequel, and writing another book as well, I've given myself a lot more berth than 1 month. I've stretched it as far as it can stretch, and hopefully I don't disappoint people. How did your experience or personal connections to New Orleans influence the authenticity of the story? Well, I'm not as familiar with New Orleans as I am with La Paz. That's where my grandmother was. But I have visited New Orleans, and it was an eye-opening experience. And I've met so many people in Louisiana, and having been around so many locals, been around my family, and just being in Louisiana is like stepping into a different country. You know, it's not your typical town. It's very Southern. It's very, I can being in New Orleans, like being in Savannah. It's like there's history there, and there's, you can't mistake it for someplace else. And so I hoped that I captured that in the story. I didn't want to make it all about being in New Orleans. I wanted it to be a story, but I wanted to make it about Charlie. And she just so happens to be in New Orleans. Yeah. How did you approach the process of getting Rue of the Day published? I'm an indie author, and so this is my eighth book. I've done it so many times. It's like, I know it like the back of my hand. It's very easy. And it was the most challenging part wasn't the publishing of it. The most challenging part of it was the writing of it and the ending of it. What advice would you give to aspiring writers who want to tackle complex plots like the one in Rue de Day? Take your time. Even if you don't think that you need to plot some of it, it's better to have the map and not need it than to need the map and not have it. Have fun, you know. Brainstorming is so much fun. Plotting is fun if you make it fun. You don't have to do it in such detail that bores you. Just take your time. How do you keep your creativity flowing, especially when writing about such intense and emotionally charged topics? When you feel the need to write, write. When you feel inspired, write. When you feel hot and you're full of ideas, write. Even if it's just jotting down notes, even if it's just jotting down phrases or scenes, write. Write it down. Because the days that you don't have that fire, you can go back and make sense of it all. But when the iron is hot, strike. What does your writing routine look like? I write just about every day. I used to get up early and write in the mornings because I'm a morning person, but I have a night job and it canceled that out. So I write when I get up and I write until it stops flowing in the afternoon. And then I edit. I try to write every day. I try to write something every day. It doesn't always work out that way because life. But I try to write at least something a day, even if it's a sentence, because it's something, right? What's next? Well, next is book two of Rue the Day. I am currently writing. It's called, this is an exclusive, it's called Hex Appeal. And it introduces more characters to the story. Everybody will be back. Except for one person. If you read Rue the Day, you'll know who that is, who didn't make it. But, and I'm also writing the third installment of The Witch's Prophecy. The Witch's Prophecy. And the exclusive of that is it's called The Witch's Curse. And I should be done with it sooner than I think I am. And I'm also writing another book that's only available on Patreon. I'm going to start uploading my books to Patreon first before I put them out. So if you're into that, if you want to read the books before they hit the shelves, sign up for my Patreon. You can read all my back catalog, which is right now it's 8 books. But I'm also writing another book that is going to be no holds bar. It's going to be interesting because it's going to have everything. And I've never written like that, but my love scenes can be out there, but they're kind of tasteful. But this book is not going to be that. It's going to be not for children, not for my mother, not for my aunts or uncles. It's going to be interesting. It's a vampire book, and it's about a billionaire vampire who gets mixed up with a journalist, and it's going to be part of a series. It's going to premiere on my Patreon first, and I'm going to be releasing a chapter or two a week until it's written, and I've already gotten started on that. That's going to come out starting next week. I'm going to have a couple of chapters ready for my Patreons. And yeah. And you can find me on Amazon, Kobo, Google, Barnes and Nobles, anywhere books are sold online. My books are available. Rue the Day is available. And you can find me on Instagram. I am at Janae the Writer. On TikTok, I am Janae the Author. I'm on Facebook, Janae Artiste. Or just Janae. And on my website is www.janaewritesbooks.com. And my email is JaneeC@JaneeWritesBooks.com. And that's all the time we have. Join us Sunday where we'll be talking about boosting creativity. And I want to thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to contact me for being on the show, write me at my email. Put guests in the subject line. Remember, writing is a journey, not a race. And I'll see you guys later. Bye, guys.